This is Peter.
And this is Tom.
And you're listening to History Teachers Talking Podcast.
Now part of the Evergreen Podcast Network.
All right, this is Peter Zablocki and Thomas Reska, and welcome back to our podcast. This is a topical one.
Well, yeah, definitely a topical
one. Unless you're listening to this like on Easter.
Yeah, this is definitely one that's, I don't know if this is going to be like a repeat listen one. You're probably going to listen to it once a year or something like that. But yeah, today we're going to look back on the first ever Thanksgiving, a little bit on the history of Thanksgiving, how a lot of the traditions that Americans and Canadians celebrate on Thanksgiving came to be. We've done these before, like Halloween and Christmas, but we were surprised we never did one on Thanksgiving before.
Yeah, I'm very surprised that we never did one on Thanksgiving. Like, we started looking back and we're like, dude, I don't think we ever did Thanksgiving, which is a crazy, awesome story. I mean, obviously disputed, controversial today.
Well, that's what it is. It's a story. It's a story. There's facts there and it does create a history. But I guess what we learned in grade school, I got really shifted.
I mean, the issue now is that it's not that what the celebration of Thanksgiving is being diminished, because we do have sources that describe this. So we know for a fact this feast that took 3 days of celebrating the harvest did take place. It was the first Thanksgiving, although it wasn't called the first Thanksgiving at the time.
No.
Like, none of that is disputed. The Native Americans and the first colonists got together. They were friendly. Like, none of that is disputed. However, many Americans, particularly Native Americans closer to modern times, think that celebrating Thanksgiving, not that it's incorrect, that it is correct, it did happen, but it masks the true story and history of the oppression and bloodshed that exemplifies the relationship between European settlers and Native Americans. The assumption is that by talking about Thanksgiving and glorifying Thanksgiving, you're almost diminishing the not so good relations between Native Americans and the European settlers.
Yeah, it was good for 3 days, but it wasn't good that much afterwards.
Although there was a second Thanksgiving that we also documented. A lot of people don't know that it was official 2 years later. There was a second Thanksgiving, often forgotten. So the first one was 1621. The second one was in 1623. But let's kind of get into this idea of, like, all right, why Plymouth? Why Thanksgiving? What happened? And then we'll get into the holiday itself and kind of tell you how that happened.
A little bit of that, yeah. Well, basically, the relationship between the Indians and Native Americans, right? The Wampanoag.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And the Pilgrims. It was very mutual beneficial, right? When the Pilgrims first arrived on Plymouth in Massachusetts. And the years just before the Pilgrims arrived, a lot of the natives were actually wiped out by a mysterious disease. And they're still trying to figure out what this was. So it wasn't those European diseases yet, because they didn't have any...
They weren't there yet. Yeah.
They didn't have any contact with them. When the Pilgrims came there, the Native Americans
taught them how to farm. Yeah.
Well, they taught them how to farm, particularly with fertilizer, using the fish remains as fertilizer. They were really able to grow plants and beans, maize, corn. And because they were able to do that, and they were able to teach these Pilgrims really how to survive on that land.
The thing that was really happening here that makes the two come together is because the situation for the Pilgrims is really not that great either. So while the Wampanoags are not really going through good times, neither really are the Pilgrims.
When they need each other.
Yeah. When the Mayflower arrived in Plymouth in 1620, right? So it was 102 passengers. The Mayflower arrives, and initially they wanted to arrive by the Hudson River. As we already know, if you study your history, winds, unfavorable conditions, wound up bringing them to New England as opposed to New York. And that is not initially where they wanted to land. Have you ever been to Plymouth?
No, but I know it's cold.
Yeah, it is cold.
It was uncomfortable crossing there. I think they said it was lasted over 66 days. So they got dropped off at Cape Cod, north of where they wanted to go from the Hudson River.
First of all, like, if you go to Plymouth now, there's the famous Plymouth Rock.
You
look down and it's like a rock. And like, yeah, I remember taking the kids and they're like, this is the rock. And I'm like, well, they say this is the rock, but like, we don't really know what rock like they landed on.
Did you smell what the rock was cooking or no?
No, I got nothing. No.
You don't get that reference, but it's okay.
Because, you know, rock, I assume it's WWE, right? That's where you go with this.
Yes.
See? You've taught me well. Needless to say, it takes about a month, as you mentioned, for the Mayflower to cross. They get into what becomes known as Massachusetts Bay. They set up this new colony. Like we mentioned, the situation is kind of dire for these guys, and most of them do die out. Quite frankly, when you think of the first winter that the colonists are here in Plymouth, so 78% of the women who had traveled in the Mayflower perished within the first winter. Only about 50 colonists were left that attended the first Thanksgiving out of the 102. And according to eyewitness accounts that survive, the first Thanksgiving only had Among pilgrims, you had only 22 men, 4 women, and 25 children or like preteens, teenagers. Most of the people during the first Thanksgiving were actually the Wampanoag Native Americans because the colonists were wiped out. They wind up meeting Squanto. So Squanto, you know, I always think of like when I go to my kids' plays when they were little. I'm sure your kids have them too. Like, who's going to play Squanto? Well,
they don't do that anymore.
They don't? Really?
That, not where we, it's maybe still other parts of the country, but they don't do those Thanksgiving Day parades or like the improper pilgrims and the really...
See, my kids still did it. Well, you're right. Actually, my younger one, I don't know if he did it. Only my older one did it.
Ah. Yeah, they don't do that. I remember to a lot of the teachers in school, like, oh, we're doing Thanksgiving. We're teaching the kids the history of Thanksgiving. We're going to dress up like Indians and pilgrims. And they were like, yeah, no, you're not going to do that. Like, that's not something that you're going to do. So that doesn't really work. And that was years ago. They meet Squanto, who actually was not native to that area. He was part of the Paltuix tribe.
Yep.
And he was actually kidnapped by the English, by an English sea captain, sold into slavery before this. He escaped from London and returned to his homeland. He's got
Which is why he spoke English.
Yeah, he's got a whole story there. But when he comes over, he meets up with these pilgrims. And he
What's left of them? After the winter, yep.
And they are incredibly malnourished and in illness. Like, this is what they're saying. Winter will just wipe people out. Like, if you're not prepared, if you don't have food, if you don't have shelter, you're gonna get wiped out. So he's teaching them like basic things, just like how to catch fish in the rivers, what plants to eat, what plants to avoid. You know, because if they're just eating anything they find, they're like, well, that's poisonous. Teaching them how to get sap from the trees and stuff like that. But he's the one that introduces them to the local tribe in the area, which is the Wampanoag. And they actually form this mutual friendship that does last for over 50 years. It's one of the best examples of early European colonists and a Native American kind of like mutual relationship and mutual respect. It does last for 50 years. And then it ends horribly. One of those things that like people talk about in history, but... Yes,
so let's get into the first Thanksgiving, right?
Well, in November of 1621, the pilgrims actually have their first successful harvest, particularly
because
of
what they learned, right?
Because of what they learned. So the governor, William Bradford, which you hear about in all the history books at this time, he organized a celebratory feast, and he invited the colonists and their Native American allies to come together and have this first Thanksgiving. And the pilgrims themselves probably didn't call it that at the time, right? Yeah. But it was a three-day festival. There's no real records of it that exist. We don't know exactly what they ate on it, although we knew some things probably. But a lot of historians suggest that many of the dishes were likely prepared by the Native Americans and using their spices, their cooking methods, because that's what they had. Because the pilgrims didn't have ovens on the Mayflower. They didn't have much sugar or anything like that left, if there was any. All right. So, you know, it didn't have
pies. They just barely survived. Yeah. There's no pies. Forget it.
There was no pies, desserts, or anything like that, which have become, you know, staples since then. And we'll talk about that. Why? They probably didn't even eat a turkey. They think there was venison, which is deer.
Deer, exactly. So I started looking into this, like, what did they actually eat? So there's a lot of guesses as to what they eat. So we know that they met, that is written down, but we don't know what they ate. So there's a lot of guessing going on when it comes to historians, archaeologists, just trying to figure out exactly what they ate. This is written down that they did eat meat because one of the witnesses wrote that the Wampanoags arrived with an offering of 5 deer. So likely they roasted this deer. And then a lot of people speculate, culinary historians speculate, that maybe they made some stew from the remnants of it. But likely there was no turkey. It was just deer.
He said it might have been ducks or geese. It maybe was a turkey or some saying, because there was a mention of a fowl, that someone did bring a fowl. So some sort of bird was consumed, but they don't think it was actually a turkey. They did eat squash. Probably shellfish. They think they definitely
a lot of fish. I did see that there was a lot of shellfish and fish.
Location,
overall.
It makes sense. Yeah,
they believe that most of it actually consisted of seafood, which is kind of crazy because that's almost gone and completely absent from today's Thanksgiving feast. But mussels, particular, abundant in New England at the time and easily harvested, they said, because they clung to rocks in the shoreline. Then they said there was like cottage cheese. Lobster was probably huge. So likely they had lobster during the first Thanksgiving. And then when you start looking into like what veggies they ate or what fruit they ate, corn was present. They said, all right, highly likely the first harvest they had, local vegetables would include onions, beans, lettuce, spinach, cabbage, carrots, and maybe peas. The corn was not eaten the same way that we would eat it on a cob. They actually turned it into cornmeal. Like, it was boiled, pounded into this thick corn mush, and basically given as like a porridge. What do you call it? Porridge, right?
Sorry, porridge, yeah.
Cranberries, which, you know, we think today, like, well, you're going to make that, you know, boiled cranberries and sugar. No, because not only
there was no sugar. Yeah.
There was no sugar. Exactly. The other one that I saw, like, I think mashed potatoes, that's like one of the staples. And they said that there was probably highly likely no potatoes, because potatoes were native to South America, which they were then brought over by the Spaniards into Europe around 1570. But even though they were brought in late 1500s, they weren't really that popular enough to make their way back on the Mayflower. So likely these guys did not have potatoes during their first Thanksgiving. They probably just ate Native American turnips. And as for pumpkin pie, they did eat pumpkins.
Yeah, maybe. Probably right, were there. They can eat them. But again, they weren't making pumpkin pie recipes. They didn't have those sorts of, they weren't able to do those sorts of things at the time. Like you said before, there was probably no real pies. So, but it is a celebration. It lasts 3 days, which imagine a 3-day Thanksgiving now. That'd be kind of fun, possibly.
That would be kind of fun.
Which I think people kind of do things like that now when they go and, you know, have a Thanksgiving, and then other traditions we'll talk about now, which is like go shopping or
Does this become a holiday? Let's run through that history.
It's not known as a Thanksgiving. It's known as a day of fasting and then a day of Thanksgiving, kind of back to back, whenever they're going to have some sort of like big occasion, right? And then it starts to become annual, and it kind of sticks for the most part. And even during the American Revolution, the Continental Congress designate one or more days a year for Thanksgiving. So it's more than one. Washington, the first president, I think we talked about this on our first ever podcast. We talked about Washington, his first, he issued the first Thanksgiving proclamation by the government in the United States, and it called upon Americans to express their happiness, their gratitude at the country's war for independence. So he calls for a day of Thanksgiving. John Adams does the same thing. James Madison does the same thing. But they were on different days. It wasn't this set time.
There's no standardized
just yet. New York in 1817 is one of the first states to actually adopt an annual Thanksgiving. But they celebrated on different days. The South, a lot of times, had it on different days. The American South had it on different days. So it's not really set in a certain spot. What really starts to become a national Thanksgiving is a woman by the name of Sarah Josephina Hale, right?
Yeah, Mary Had a Little Lamb.
She created Mary Had a Little Lamb, but both of other ones. And she kind of creates a campaign to launch a Thanksgiving national holiday. And she does this for like
36 years.
She's trying to get this like put in place. So she had her plan. She was going to get this to happen.
And for 36 years, she's writing editorials. She's sending letters to governors, senators, presidents. Okay, I remember 36 years. Presidents change often. She is just on this quest to create an actual national Thanksgiving.
National holiday years. Thanksgiving. And she That's becomes nuts. Known as the mother of Thanksgiving. Everyone, every state, every area is doing this. Towns are doing this. We need a national one. And the president that finally agreed or finally went with it was Abraham Lincoln. And this is because of the Civil War. In 1863, he basically says, you know, we need to have a national day of Thanksgiving. Mainly he does it because of all the widows and orphans and people who like lost family members, that they need to have some sort of like, we have to heal the wounds of the nation. So he schedules Thanksgiving for the final Thursday in November. And that's where it was celebrated pretty much every year up until 1939, when FDR moved the holiday up a week.
Franksgiving, they call it, after Franklin.
Yeah, Franksgiving, yeah. So because he's basically trying to get retailers like a more Christmas holiday season, because people will refuse to shop for the holidays until Thanksgiving. Which is really what you saw, I would say, really up until the mid-2000s, right? Maybe give or take. And now you see Christmas stuff out right during Halloween.
Literally, I went shopping like yesterday. My younger son needed a sweatshirt. So I'm like, all right, let's go to the mall. Like, he's get you a couple of sweatshirts. There's no such thing as Black Friday. Like, literally, Black Friday sale. I'm looking at sweatshirts.
There might be some extra things, maybe.
Yeah, but
all this stuff is pretty much out. They just call it that. It's a marketing thing.
That's all it is. It's a market ploy.
But yeah, that's what. Anyway, that was Roosevelt really putting that into place to try to spur up retail sales during the Great Depression.
He got in trouble for that.
People didn't really like it. Yeah, they kind of didn't really like it having being moved up so much. And then in 1941, he signed a bill making Thanksgiving the fourth Thursday in November. And that's where it's stuck. And that's where it's always going to be. Because sometimes it's actually five Thursdays in November. So they needed to have like a different, they would celebrate it different times. So they said, no, it's always going to be the fourth Thursday in November. And then that's really where it sticks from 1941 on. That's where it's going to be. It's a national holiday because of Lincoln and then later Roosevelt. And it becomes a major American holiday. And then you're going to have all these traditions that really start here. And that's really what it is about. It's not really a religious significance. You know, it's all about just having a bountiful meal with family, with friends, and you're having and giving thanks to what you have. And there's some other things in it too that we'll talk about, but that's really where it comes from. And if you see in what I thought was interesting is you look at it, it kind of fits with American folklore or Americana, because what are they celebrating? They're celebrating the end of Revolutionary War. They're celebrating the end of the, you know, they're Civil War, and then World War II in 41. Yeah. Like, if they're all revolves around conflict, and then what are we going to do? We have to give thanks for what we do have. And it's a very American thing. It's celebrating other countries too. Canada, I think Brazil, its roots are in the United States. Or what becomes United States.
Yeah, and I actually think of Norman Rockwell's Freedom from Want, which is a very famous Norman Rockwell painting where you see the woman and the whole family's around the dinner table, Thanksgiving feast, and she's putting the turkey down. And so that comes from, obviously, World War II, reminding the American people what we're fighting for, which is freedom from fear, freedom from want, freedom of worship, and freedom of speech. But it's interesting because out of those four freedoms to remind Americans what they're fighting for, Norman Rockwell, who basically painted America, the story of America, chose Thanksgiving to showcase like what you're fighting for, which again kind of adds a little bit to this Thanksgiving holiday. However, if you look at the statistics, not everyone eats a turkey. And I noticed from my own family, I'm sure you know from yours, about 90% of Americans eat turkey.
Well, you have, I guess, vegetarians aren't going to eat it, but most people...
A lot of people eat ham. People like eat ham and other things. That's usually probably the closest substitute, right?
Well, it can be like my family that has lasagna, ham, and turkey.
Oh, wow.
So we have all of them.
Hello, my name is Peter Zablocki, and I'm a historian, author, and college professor. I'm thrilled to invite you to check out Evergreen Network's History Shorts podcast. Every Tuesday and Thursday, join me on a journey through time, exploring the little-known and hidden gems of history. In each bite-sized episode, I'll dive into my original research to bring you intriguing historical curiosities you've probably never heard of, uncovering the fascinating stories that have shaped our world. From forgotten figures to overlooked events. And the best part? I've condensed all this historical goodness into manageable chunks, perfect for your on-the-go lifestyle. Whether you're commuting to work or squeezing in a quick break, History Shorts fits into the little time you probably think you don't have. Subscribe now and never miss an episode of the History Shorts podcast, available wherever you get your podcasts.
So, but anyway, yeah. So most people eat the turk. We eat a bird. Eat a turkey, and that really came about what in the 1800s. There was like a campaign to get turkeys eaten on Thanksgiving. Yep. So that was kind of like a reason for it. And it was like basically you had the Georgia Augusta Chronicle in 1882 said every person who can't afford a turkey or procure it will sacrifice the noble American fowl on that day. So it kind of becomes synonymous with turkey again because of those Norman Rockwell paintings and stuff. But then you have these like campaigns out there that how important it is to have a turkey because it's supposed to be seen as this like feast. Right? Usually it was actually a Christmas feast. A Christmas turkey was a big thing. And then they kind of moved it up to Thanksgiving. So I think one of the big things is that a lot of, and it becomes even bigger, is that parades become a really big part. In the cities, in the towns across the United States. And the biggest one starts in 1924 with the Macy's Department Store Parade, right? Yeah. That's the one that you put on TV and goes down in New York City. And it's the largest and most famous attractions. About, 2-3 million people do it. It's about 2.5 miles long. I remember years ago when I was in, beginning of college, I actually worked at Macy's. And you were allowed, if you wanted to go, you could go to New York and they would – these are all volunteers. Be one of the balloon holders or march in a parade. But you had to get there at like 4 o'clock in the morning. And I was like, no, I'm good. I wasn't going to do it. But we were allowed to. It was one of the things they told us. It was like a perk. I'm like, how is getting up at 4 o'clock in the morning a perk of the job? But anyway.
I'm not sure if you saw this, but Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade was originally called Macy's Christmas Parade. Mm-hmm. It happened on Thanksgiving, but it was meant to kick off the holiday shopping season. Because Macy's shopping. So it was called Macy's Christmas Parade.
And Christmas Parade. And anyone who watches the end of the parade to the end, which we always had to do in my household, was who comes out the end of the parade, but it's Santa Claus. That's the whole point. That, Santa Claus is coming out. It's ushering in, like you said, the beginning of the shopping season. And then Macy's is synonymous with Santa Claus too, Miracle on 34th Street and everything of that nature.
Yeah. Also interesting, the first parade, when it started in 1924, wow, it's going to be 100 years next year. That should be a big parade. Yeah. It didn't have balloons per se. It did, but not many. It brought out Central Park Zoo lent their animals.
Things were wild back then. I'm just going to walk a lion down. That's what it was.
You're not kidding. Lions, elephants, bears, monkeys, camels. They're like, all right, that's what's going to walk in a parade. The most appearances of any balloon, by the way, is Snoopy. Been around since 68.
He's a, what's a synonymous one, probably Snoopy, the Macy stars. And you have like all the other like famous cartoon characters. You always have new ones every year. You have ones that, you know, promoting a movie or a book and stuff like that. You know, Trolls, I think, has been a big one. I know that movie just came out, but I know Superman, right? So you have the cartoons of the day, Popeye, that they're all going to come out. And it's just something to always see. But they actually advertise the balloons now. If you watch it, like, oh, coming up, you're going to see, you know, watch the Trolls balloon, watch Barbie come by and stuff like that. Oh, I want to make sure I see that balloon. So, and then they have the floats out of different things. So it's just become like part of Americana. That's what you do. You wake up and you start cooking the turkey because it's going to take 6 hours to cook, and you're going to watch the Thanksgiving Day parade and then go wherever you have to do, or people are going to come over your house, whatever you have to do. And that just becomes, well, football, we'll get to that. That becomes another.
So when I looked into this, the idea of football, a traditional.
This is American football, Peter, not your.
Yes,
not
I know. Okay, the traditional football. Oh, there's kicking. Ha. Huh? The traditional football on Thanksgiving actually started with a college ball. It was the first like tradition of playing football on Thanksgiving that was watched by anyone, not on TV by any means. This is 1876. It was a game between Yale and Princeton. That was the first like traditional game that started.
And people watched it because everyone was off from work.
Yeah, they went to watch it after they ate.
So since it was no one had work, oh, let's watch this sporting event. And the only thing that was going on was at the time football, which was relatively young in this time, right? The 18, when was it again?
Yeah, 1870s.
Yeah, that's because, pretty much the beginning of football.
Well, then you have the first Thanksgiving Day football game, professional play game, was played in 1920, and it was often in 1920s, it was sent to people's homes via radio. So you would sit at the radio after you ate to listen to pro football, you know, games. So yeah, six football games.
It's synonymous with the holiday because of that. And now that's it. Like, that's what you do. You watch. You know, they have multiple games on that day.
Well, there was six football games in 1920, the first time that there was official football during Thanksgiving Day. But I'm looking at these teams, and I don't really know any of them. None of them are really here anymore. Chicago Boosters, Chicago Tigers.
Well, a lot of these predates the NFL. That's
This is a fun one. Jingle Bells was originally a Thanksgiving song.
Thanksgiving Day song. Yes, I remember that. Yeah.
Yeah, 1857.
Well, because Thanksgiving is the biggest travel day of the year. People want to get there for Thanksgiving, right? So that's what that plays about. You're dashing through the snow in a one-horse open sleigh through the hills we go, laughing all the way. Because they're going to visit grandma, whoever, to get there in time for Thanksgiving. Yeah. And there's a ton of movies that have come out every year about like people trying to get there for Thanksgiving. Like, you always play Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. That's a big one. There's a bunch of other movies. I'm sure they don't really do. I'm thinking of all those Hallmark movies that my wife watches. I don't think any of them are revolve around Thanksgiving. They usually all Christmas. No.
At all Christmas.
But
yeah, trust me. Anyway. I know. Well, my wife watches them too. I mean, don't get me wrong. Like, I always pretend I don't watch it. Like, I'll walk past and I'm like, ugh, this movie. Like,
They're all the same plot. It's like a hardworking ad executive goes back to a small town and finds true love.
Literally.
One or the other. Or some of them actually have Santa in it too. And then Santa's like.
Yeah, some are magical. I always get sucked in. Like, I pretend.
Peter, they're all magical. Okay.
They're all magic. That's right. You know it. You know it. However, I do get sucked in. I'm not going to lie. I never sit to watch, but I'm always around watching it.
It gets confusing, too, because a lot of times it's the same actors.
It is.
So it's like, wait, what is going on? But yeah. Exactly.
I don't know how I did not know this, but did you know there's a turkey talk line?
To help you with turkeys?
Yeah. It was first opened in 1981. And in U.S. and Canadian homes, it's opened every November and December. It's a unique hotline which you could actually call. And they were like, help you. It's called the Butterball Company Turkey Talk Line. And they help you, like, you know, answer your questions about cooking your turkey. Now they also have online chat, like, option.
Yeah. So you mean, before, actually, we had to pull out the neck and the giblets and all that stuff from the turkey that we're getting ready to cook. So I just looked it up on YouTube because I've never actually done that before. And my wife was like, I am not doing this. So nice. I was like, all right, well, I guess I'm being volunteered to do it. Even though my boys were more than happy to do it possibly. But I was like, no, I got it. So we had to pull that out. Just, yeah, I found it on YouTube right away. 1, 2, 3, just to find it. Usually they let it fall a little bit more. I was trying to tell my wife, but it was still frozen solid, the turkey. But preparing a turkey is a lot more complicated than I think people realized. I mean, I didn't know how to like cook it for that long.
All right, so let's be honest here, because if
also why they probably didn't have it the first Thanksgiving then if it took this long to cook.
Exactly, right? Well, they had deer. But
then it wasn't frozen either. But anyway.
Statistics, you know, I guess sometimes they lie, but mostly they're there. Statistics point to the fact that 68% of Americans actually dislike the dishes they eat on Thanksgiving, which include cranberry sauce, which you normally don't eat, pumpkin pie, which, believe it or not, Americans actually prefer apple pie.
Apples are one, but pumpkin pie they'll eat on Thanksgiving.
Exactly, but they wouldn't go for it in, like, you know, in May.
Yeah. And what I also read about the pumpkin pie, probably sort of topic, but the pumpkin pie, apparently the recipe is like the same, almost the same as it was like in the 1700s. It hasn't really changed that much, pumpkin pie, the actual recipe. Like, it's cool. It's good with Cool Whip. I like it if you put
Cool Whip. Yeah, but then you're just tasting Cool Whip.
Well, that's okay.
Oh, you cheater.
I like cherry pie. I bought a cocktail.
Really? Oh, no, I'm an apple guy.
Apple, no problem with apple, don't get me wrong, but nice cherry pie.
So according to this survey, turkey itself is really not liked as well. People eat it because it's tradition. However, they say that 30% of Thanksgiving dinners in America, this poll that was done in 2019, say that something else rather than turkey is served as even the main course sometimes. Pork is the second most popular option.
I see that.
And like, even for myself, when I think about it, like, I don't eat turkey. I mean, I have like a turkey sandwich here and there, but I don't eat turkey. Like,
on Thanksgiving?
No. No, Thanksgiving I do, but like besides Thanksgiving.
Well, no, it's also because, like you said before, it takes long to prepare. If you're gonna, I guess you can get like smaller ones, obviously. But yeah, the only other times I'll eat like turkey sandwiches. You get on like
but that's
slice or whatever. But like, yeah. Sometimes theme parks or like fairs, they have those giant turkey legs. Those
oh, yeah, that's different. Yeah.
Those are good. But yeah, you're not going to usually going to eat chicken or, yeah, you're going to get like the wings or something like that. Or, you know, I guess you're not getting turkeys. You don't usually be making turkeys other times throughout the year, just because it's so synonymous with Thanksgiving and because it does take so long to cook it.
Yeah. But talking about how much turkey's left over, it's the reason we have TV dinners. This is a fun story, right? In 1953, Swanson & Company, that is known for making TV dinners, overestimated number of frozen turkeys the company needed to order for Thanksgiving. So it was left with 260 tons of extra turkey, the Swanson Company. So they're like, what do? We don't want to like eat the loss. Literally. So the salesman named Gary Thomas came up with an idea. So like, you know what? Why don't we just create and sell individual turkey dinners? Like, we'll throw in cornbread dressing, gravy, peas, even sweet potatoes, and these trays that you could like kind of similar to airline meals at the time in the 50s. Each turkey dinner or TV dinner that you could throw in the oven for, you know, eventually became microwave, cost 98 cents. This little tray, you throw it in, it's all done.
Yeah, you get all the trimmings, right?
And that is what made Swanson, the company, literally iconic because of over...
TV dinners. That's what it was. Yeah, that TV dinner, yeah, like TV the brown dinners. Gravy. Yeah, remember that. Speaking of turkey, so that was 1953. This happened a couple of days ago, this anniversary. In November 19th of 1963 was the date of the first turkey being pardoned.
So HW, yeah. HW, right?
Well, that he made the tradition, but the first turkey that was ever pardoned was actually in 1963 by John F. Kennedy. He supposedly says, we'll just let this one grow old. It's our Thanksgiving present to him. So he did that actually on November 19th, which was just a few days before the 22nd when he goes to Dallas. And that whole fiasco happens.
By the way, yeah, I mean, you know, since we're on that, and we are recording this the day before the 60th anniversary of JFK shooting, there's a really cool documentary I just watched on Paramount Plus. So it's interviews with the doctors from Parkland Hospital.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That were actually like in that room.
Yeah, there's a movie about that too.
Yeah, I highly recommend it. It was really, really good. I do highly recommend that.
So Kennedy was the first one to do it, but George W. Bush in 1989 was the one that started the annual tradition that they still do today when they will officially pardon a turkey on Thanksgiving. Probably the turkeys don't live that long anyway. They kind of die because they're kind of like bred only to live to that time and then they die. And they're mostly all turkeys consumed on Thanksgiving are mostly males, I think I saw.
Yeah.
But I saw what was interesting, getting on the turkey again, I know we're focusing on turkey so much, is that as the size of turkeys have constantly increased over the years, as Americans have gotten bigger, the size of the turkeys have also gotten bigger because we basically consumed 22 million of them just during that time. But it just gives you an idea. The average American will consume 4,500 calories and 229 grams of fat on Thanksgiving Day. And the average caloric intake for a person is 2,000 per day. So we like more than double it. And they said like a typical adult needs to spend 10 hours on a steady pace, like jogging on a treadmill to burn off the average Thanksgiving Day meal. and if most people tend to gain at least 1 pound between Thanksgiving and Christmas, I would think a bit more than that.
Probably adds to it is the day before. So, which is, I didn't know it was officially, because everyone always comes back, you know, from college and somewhere else. Yeah. This is the night before Thanksgiving is where people have off, knowing that the next day is off. They go out. And apparently it's known as Drinksgiving. I did not know this.
I know it was a big, I remember when we were in college, though. I remember they were all saying it was a big day going out to.
Yeah, you go out. Then it was Wednesday night. Yeah.
The day before Thanksgiving. I remember also the day after Thanksgiving was a big day, though, too.
I remember going out the Wednesday before, but I didn't know it was called Drinksgiving. Or some people even dub it like the Black Wednesday. Bars.
Yeah, they'll go out and
just making tons of money.
Because everyone, a lot of the college kids are home. So, yeah, they don't want to stay any more time with their parents. So let's go out to the bars and.
Well, Uber, did you see that Uber started offering free rides on Wednesday night before Thanksgiving?
Oh, really?
Yep. It's like their new thing. Everyone thinks of like Black Friday, you know, shopping, but actually Black Friday, so the Friday after Thanksgiving, is the busiest day for plumbers in the United States. I kid you not. No, like someone did a study on this in 2017.
Yeah, I remember hearing that.
Busiest days of the year. it's gross, but Roto-Rooter Plumbing and Water Cleaning Company actually calls Friday after Thanksgiving Brown Friday.
Okay. Well, that goes in what I was going to say, what I was talking about before, is that the average weight of a turkey in 1960 was 17 pounds. Now it's 31 pounds.
Jesus.
Right? And the average weight of an American male in 1960 was 166 pounds, and now it's 198 pounds, the average weight. The size has increased, and as the size increased, I guess that's going to lead to the plumbing issues that you're talking about.
I had no idea this was a thing. Like, that literally just like floored me. I was like, what? I got to make a note of this. Like, when I was prepping for this, I'm like, this, I had to come back to this. Also, apparently, this is kind of funny. In 1926, President Calvin Coolidge, on the day of Thanksgiving, for his Thanksgiving dinner, like some local farmers were supposed to gift him a turkey. And they publicly gifted him a live raccoon. Did you see this? Yeah. Okay. So he was like, and they're like, we could eat the raccoon. And he was like, yeah, no, I'm not going to eat this raccoon. This is 1920s. So he decided to actually keep the raccoon as a pet. And it became his pet while he was president of the United States. Him and his wife were apparently animal lovers. So they even supposedly had a bear and a lion. Lion cubs. Right, as pets. So the raccoon kind of fit right in.
I'm sure there are people who, you know, they're going to give thanks that they have this raccoon eat. So more power to you. Well, the one thing was kind of interesting. What state has the most travel to during Thanksgiving?
Ooh, I don't know. Hold on, wait.
Think about it for a second and it'll make sense. So remember, most people travel on Thanksgiving. Where are they going to travel to? If they're going to go visit like their parents. Yeah, where a lot of people from the Northeast go when they get older?
Florida?
Florida has more travel than any other place on the earth during Thanksgiving. Or in the United States, yeah.
Hmm.
Because everyone's going there, I guess, to visit parents and stuff like that. I'm sure like the Disney, I guess Disney's probably big at that time too, right?
You know what, but what really gets me is when you think of like the Black Friday deals, right? And the Black Friday shopping, because now they extended it to like 6 p.m. on Thanksgiving. Like it's no longer
midnight.
A
lot of stores have gone away from that. Like, I remember when I used to work retail, I was in high school, early college. A lot of times Thanksgiving, yeah, you close early on Thanksgiving. But recently, a lot of them actually close on Thanksgiving because they're like, now they want our employees to stay home. And they realize people don't really come after a certain time. Because I've had some of those stores, I'd be working there, and they'd be like, there was nobody there from a certain period of time. It's like, why are we even here? And the next day is different. Black Friday is totally different. They'll say, listen, we'll close on Thursday, but Black Friday will be open. But now so much more is done on online than anything else. So it's kind of – people still go to those stores, but you can get those same deals online, if you're tech savvy or just know how to, like, do it. But it's still a major shopping day. But a lot of families also, as part of their tradition, is that they're going to go and not camp out, but I guess go early, late at night and go to, like, a midnight opening at – used to be Toys R Us. We used to go for a couple of years.
Oh, my God, I love Toys R Us.
When Toys R Us opened up at midnight. On Black Friday, let's go in. We didn't even know what we were looking for. Let's just grab something, you know?
I just feel bad for the workers, you know? Like, it's messed up. It's Thanksgiving, you know?
They're giving thanks that they're working retail, I guess.
That pretty much sums up our Thanksgiving. I cannot believe after, like, this is 3 years of doing this podcast, we never did a Thanksgiving.
It just shows that, you know, there's so many more things. I mean, there's endless number of things we could explore.
Yes.
So the fact that we never got to this one yet, so.
yeah, that's that. So a few announcements. One, we are now on YouTube, guys. So if for some reason you find it easier to listen to this podcast, I mean, obviously you're already listening to it because, you know, you are listening to it. But if you want to let your friends know, we are on YouTube and we are going to be adding more videos and things. Right now, it's mostly just our podcast, but at least it is now a thing. So we're excited about that. Please do continue sending in any of your suggestions. We do write them down and we do eventually get to them. There is a list. So we kind of put it on a list and, you know, it might take a while, but we do get to it. Also, posted doing the lectures that I used to do every couple of weeks. It now has its own dedicated podcast channel and it's called History Shorts. So you guys could check that out as well. Pretty much it. You know, continue following us. We are everywhere. You could find us everywhere.
Hopefully people like it.
Yeah. I mean, you know, the fact I think, you know, we've accomplished so much in 3 years. So it's something to be thankful for in this Thanksgiving.
There you go. Full circle, Pete.
Full circle, indeed. So thank you so much. If you guys need to find us, you can find us at www.historyteacherstalkingpodcast.com. We are there to answer any of your questions. And you know what? Happy Thanksgiving, everyone. We appreciate you. Thank you. And we'll see you guys again next week.
Stay safe, everybody.
I hope everyone enjoyed our podcast, and if you would like to email us, you can do so at historyteacherspodcast@gmail.com.
I'm Ken Harbaugh, host of Warriors in Their Own Words, a podcast that presents the unvarnished, unsanitized truth of what we have asked of those who defend this nation. As a country, we need these stories more than ever. Stories from Americans who have borne the battle, including 30-year-old remastered interviews with veterans from World War I recounting their time in the trenches of Europe, and with veterans from World War II, Korea, Vietnam, and from our most recent conflicts in Iraq, Afghanistan, and other battlefields Americans may never have heard of. Hear their stories by listening to Warriors in Their Own Words wherever you find podcasts.